This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
Is it possible to dehumanize a human being? Of course, you may wonder, what does it mean to dehumanize? And some might even ask, what does it mean to be a human being? But most of us understand what it means to be a human being. So is it possible to dehumanize a human being? Someone has written that dehumanization precedes atrocities. What does that mean? Well, it means that dehumanization operates by eroding empathy and reframing a targeted group or individual as undeserved of moral consideration. So that enables extreme cruelty and violence, even persecution. So today on Viewpoint, we're going to discuss this matter of dehumanization and how it's related to what we're experiencing in our country and what we're experiencing around the world. You see the violence exploding. You see violence exploding in Portland. You see violence exploding all over the country in various ways. But where is the violence coming from? What groups of people are actually promoting and carrying out this kind of violence as a general rule? Well, first of all, it's people who largely have put away any fear of the Lord. They're walking in a completely different mind and heart set. They don't even operate according to the basic principles of the Constitution and its precursor, the Declaration of Independence, that recites that all that we have is a gift from God. The whole idea of God is gone. It's all about me. I become a virtual deity in and of myself. And if I become a virtual deity in and of myself, for all practical purpose that is, then I am able to form viewpoints and opinions that enable me to treat anyone else who disagrees with impunity at the very least and violence at the most. So what does this business include, this matter of dehumanizing? Well, it creates a moral exclusion. When a group is dehumanized, it's moved outside the boundaries of who society believes is worthy of fair treatment, dignity, and basic rights. And that process is at the core of what you might call moral exclusion. Then there's the diminishing of empathy, calling people animals or vermin or monsters. Or how about, well, you name the names, the labels that are being handed out today, like white supremacists. The moment we put a label on someone is the moment we've got a problem and a trend toward dehumanizing. And that reduces our capacity for empathy toward that person or group. As emotional and moral distance grows, it becomes easier to mistreat and hurt the targeted group. Then comes the normalization of violence. Dehumanizing language and imagery normalize discriminatory attitudes and behavior. And that makes it easier to justify or commit acts of violence against a perceived lesser group or the other out there, whoever that is, enabling moral engagement. A psychologist described how dehumanization allows aggressors to disengage their normal moral self-sanctions, such as guilt and empathy, that would otherwise restrain them from harming others. Well, I would add to that, that's a psychological version. I would add to that the spiritual dimension that actually was mentioned by our earlier founders in this country. One said, our government was made for a moral and Christian people and is wholly unable for the government of any other. In other words, there had to be a precursor or a pre-established norm in the mind and heart of we the people in order for our government, a Republican democracy, to form and to work without violence, so that we could have a turnover of government administrations without violence, which had been so accustomed to in Europe, so that we could actually have a measure of honor and respect to one among ourselves, so that we could enter into elections without violence, trusting that each person was basically operating within the general framework of believing that we were all made in the image of God, that we were all human beings, and therefore, because God honored life, we honored life, and therefore we would give a certain amount of leeway for other people to have differences of viewpoint or opinion, because we're all, shall we say, under the same general umbrella of moral and spiritual governance, beginning with the fear of the Lord. Well, that's largely disappeared in America. Just look at the politics. The blue state and red state dichotomy is a revelation of the labels that have become libels, and therefore the actual recognition in forms of blue and red states of the dehumanization that's taken place, particularly by blue state folk who, well, they're the ones that are largely creating the violence in the country. So, and actually calling for the violence in the country. One article asked this question: how can we save America from the radicals? America's caught up in a tug of war that feels like it's pulling the nation apart at the seams. On one side stands the radical left or woke left, proudly flying the banner of Marx's vision of communism under the modern guise of wokeness. On the other side, the so-called political right are frustrated with the left, with the institutionalization of the left's agenda in our schools, media, and government, that's beginning to embrace the rhetoric and logic of fascism. Well, that's, I'm wondering where the logic and idea of fascism is coming in on the right. Only by those who are on the left who want to use the term fascism as yet another way of political dehumanization. The moment we start using Marxism to describe everything that a person believes, if they don't agree with me, is also another form of threshold dehumanization. It's not that there isn't such a thing as Marxism. It's that we use these terms much too freely and much too loosely as a means of very quickly and cleverly creating a dichotomy in our country and among groups. So where does that lead? What all is going on here? Is there anything that can be done about it? And where do we find this taking place? Well, let me share some thoughts with you as we move on into the program today. You're listening to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Chrismeyer. It's conversation, as always, with ever-increasing conviction, talk that transforms. And here are just a sampling of articles that show where and how this is taking place. For instance, Tom Holman, who is the border czar, shall we say, charged by the United States government for carrying out the protection of the United States under the Constitution to keep out those who have entered the country illegally and to remove those who have come illegally. Well, would you like to know what's happened to him? Would you? Are you sure? Would you like to know what's happened in Georgia textbooks concerning Christians for almost 20 years? Oh, you might just want to know. Dehumanization.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination. So what happened in just one generation? Hi, I'm Chuck Chrismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Dehumanization precedes atrocities. Yeah. Where labels become libels. One of the things that we've avoided on this program for years and years and years since its very beginning is that we refuse to use commonly used labels loosely. You will very seldom hear me talk about the left or the right. the way it's talked about generally in America's politics. That doesn't mean I don't understand what they mean, but what it means is the moment we start using labels like that is the moment we are, in a sense, dehumanizing everybody that we consider out there on that side or on the other side, and therefore never the twain shall meet, and there's no place for discussion. They're essentially dehumanized, either politically or religiously or socially, whatever it happens to be. It's a form of shunning. Now, what's happened with Tom Holman, the border czar? Well, yesterday, he said that his family has been in hiding because of death threats and reporters trying to seek his family's location. Now, why would reporters be trying to seek his family's location? Because they have an agenda based on dehumanization. In other words, from their viewpoint, they have concluded that if somebody is seeking to remove, under the Constitution and under color of law, to remove illegals from the country, that by definition makes you unhuman, less than human, worthy of violence, worthy of mistreatment, worthy of exclusion from legitimate society, even worthy of death. You may think that goes too far, but listen to the article. Law enforcement officers and Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE agents, have faced a 1,000% increase in assaults, and their families have been doxxed and threatened online, according to the Department of Homeland Security. Tom Holman, the head of the Border Czar, says, I have not lived with my wife since late March, in other words, about 6 months, because of death threats against me. And now there are reporters trying to find the location of my family. There are reporters trying to identify who my sons are. This has gone beyond the pale. In fact, it has. In fact, it went beyond the pale long, 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 long ago, when we considered that we were a nation of laws and not of men. For those who are perpetrating this kind of threatening against agents who are operating under the Constitution and to accomplish a necessary purpose to preserve the borders of a land so that it can continue to be called a nation, those persons who are doing that necessarily, in order to carry on their agenda, have to dehumanize everyone that stands in their way. So Tom Holman becomes the central figure to stand in their way. His family must be violently opposed, threatened online. He can't live with his wife because of the threats. Are you seeing what's going on? And who is doing this? Where is this coming from? It's coming from that group of people in our country who have abandoned the fear of the Lord wholesale. To them, they are their God. I think, therefore, I am God. I think, therefore, I have the right, the power, the authority to dehumanize others, to do whatever I want to do to achieve my agenda. In other words, the end justifies the means. We used to say that that was characteristic of Russia. Now it's characteristic of the entire left movement or the entire politically liberal and woke movement in America. Now, they were using those terms not to alienate a group of people, to help identify for purposes of conversation who that group actually is. But why are they like that? They're that way because, not just because they're violent people, but because they have dehumanized all of their opposition, the people that they disagree with, because there's no fear of the Lord in their life, no fear of God in their life. If God created human beings in his image, then they don't care because they don't believe. They might believe there's a God, but they don't have any fear of God. They just generally believe there's a God. Oh, yeah, well, maybe. But they're not accountable to him, you see. So the fear of the Lord was the very foundation of our government and our way of life. Our government was unable to handle any other. Our government was made for a moral and Christian people and is unable to handle, control, or deal with any other. So when things begin to fall apart, there is a reason. The unfortunate thing is that we have not been able or willing to identify the reasons. We're afraid to do it. Our politicians are afraid to do it. In many respects, our pastors have been afraid to do it. The legal system has been afraid to do it. Everybody is fearing everything but God. And so violence becomes the name of the game, and dehumanization begins to create atrocities. Now, here's another one that I found interesting. A young lady in Texas, excuse me, in Georgia, she called out a textbook that describes Christians as white supremacist. Notice the label, white supremacist. The moment that label is created, it's created for a reason. The reason for creating the label and using it is to divide off and libel anybody that you want to conclude is within that realm. Why? Because they're not worthy to live in society. They must be excluded from society either by force or threat of force. That's violence. So here's the rest of the story. As you know, university communities all over the country, across the United States, essentially are communities of what is called political liberalism. Conservative students often are silenced. Conservative teachers largely cannot be found. By the way, I'm reading here. I'm not creating these words to label or to libel. But now one student at the University of North Georgia says it's gone further. With her assigned $100 textbook openly slamming Christians as white supremacists. Kelby Murphy, a senior, bought the assigned book for her course in international public relations. In chapter 8, the opening passage reads, an internet search produces the following modifier for identity, corporate, sexual, digital, public, racial, national, brand, and even Christian, a U.S.-based white supremacist group. That's what it says. Christian, a U.S.-based white supremacist group, unquote. Do you realize what they said? The effect of what they said was, if you are a professing Christian in the United States, you are by definition, from the standpoint of the University of Georgia, and anyone else who is using those textbooks, you are part of a white supremacist group. You have nothing to say about it. You can't resist the accusation because it's by definition the accusation. It's stated as a fact. The young lady that was reporting this says it listed several marginalized groups, but then only called Christians to be white supremacists. Excuse me, white supremacists. But she said the scariest thing is that that book was written in 2007. In other words, 18 years ago. So it's been promoting this idea of dehumanization of Christians for 18 years. She said, I don't want people who don't know who Jesus is or who don't know what Christianity is to take this and run with this and see Christians as a U.S.-based white supremacy group. And she's right. But what group did this? Who wrote this textbook? The very group of people who have abandoned the fear of the Lord and who have engaged in what is generally called radical left-wing woke thinking. In other words, they've rejected the basis of the Bible. They have rejected what the Bible teaches, and therefore they have rejected God and Jesus Christ as his, as the Savior of the world, rejected them in favor of a whole different viewpoint. It's pretty amazing. And it's perpetrated in the name of the authority of education. In Georgia, a Bible Belt state. Do you see how far this has gone, my friends? So one article asks, leftists are violent. Is that any surprise? Another article says, when activism turns lethal, political violence becomes morally acceptable to the left. Political violence. But it's not just political violence. It's spiritual violence. It's religious violence. Everything goes then when you have kicked over the traces. Why? Because the other are less than human. Less than human. So let me just ask you a question early on here as we're getting more deeply into this conversation. How do you look at people? It's not a matter of whether you like someone. It's not a matter of whether you agree with someone's politics, political view, or whether you agree with their spiritual view, or whether you believe with their health view, or whatever else. That isn't the point. People have their viewpoints. And as we say regularly here on this program, viewpoint determines destiny. But if the people are almost universally governing under the fear of the Lord, that is, the fear of God, believe in a God who will hold them accountable, then they have, there's a control factor that's built in. It's called moral control. Without there is no morality. It's every man doing that which is right in his own eyes. And that's what's happening. And when groups band together to do that which is right in their own eyes, they dehumanize everybody else. And so everybody else is not worthy to live, not worthy to hold office, not worthy to be considered for jobs, not worthy for this, not worthy for that. And that's what's producing massive persecution all over the world. So all of these things are tied in together. They are pictures of the end of the age, the end times, just as it was in the early days of Noah. Remember the early days of Noah? It says in Genesis chapter 6 that violence was upon the earth. It was horrible. Men were doing that which they wanted to do, no restraint. And God looked down on what they were doing and said, this is it. I can't put up with this. I'm not going to allow this to continue. These people made in my image. No, they have desecrated that image. They're going to self-destruct, and I'm not going to allow that to happen. I'm going to destroy them myself. And so he did that by proclaiming the flood. Read it. Genesis chapter 6. Jesus said, as it was in the days of Noah, so it will be just before my second coming. Are we there yet, friends? Oh, we are there big time. We'll be right back after this to discuss this issue of dehumanization that precedes atrocities and apply it even further. I hope you'll stay tuned. We'll be right back.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, saveus.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, saveus.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at saveus.org.
Welcome back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. There's a long history of violence proceeding from those who are characterized by what is normally called left-wing thinking, ideas that believe that they're the only ones that are entitled to claim any measure of truth and everyone else must be removed. Now, what does that look like? Well, let me give you some illustrations here. If we know anything about history, we know that there's been a long simmering threat of political violence around the edges of American politics that it rears its ugly head every once in a while in serious ways. How about President Abraham Lincoln? He was assassinated at Ford's Theater just days after the conclusion of the American Civil War. Why? Because Wilkes Booth didn't like what he had done in freeing the slaves. So Abraham Lincoln had to go. He could not be tolerated in civil society. So Booth arrogated himself to become a veritable god. Abraham Lincoln was not worthy to live. He was dehumanized in the mind and heart of Booth. Now, less than 40 years later, President William McKinley was shot by an anarchist. A what? An anarchist. What's an anarchist? An anarchist is one who believes in political violence because they don't like government. They think everybody should be able to do exactly what they want to do. They don't want any government control. They don't want a constitution. So, he thought President William McKinley wasn't worthy to live. He was dehumanized in the mind and heart of that assassin, that anarchist. In 1935, U.S. Senator and former governor of Louisiana, Huey Long, was murdered in the state capitol building that he himself had built. Why? Because whoever murdered him did not consider that his viewpoints were worthy of consideration, and therefore he himself was not worthy to live. Then infamously, both President John F. Kennedy in 1963 and his brother, then Senator and presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy, were assassinated in the 1960s. Why? Because the left did not like their stances. And, of course, there are other theories involved there. But regardless of the theory, the motivation was that either one of these Kennedys could not be tolerated in civil society. Their humanity was not worthy because they were in disagreement with the individual or group that precipitated the assassinations. And then more recently, how about the effort to assassinate Donald Trump? Same thing. Dehumanized him, wasn't worthy to live, decided that the guy that was going to do the shooting was more worthy than Donald Trump, and therefore Donald Trump had to go. And how about the Minnesota state legislator, Melissa Hortman, and her husband, who were shot and killed in their home back in June? Or riots in major American metropolitan cities targeting U.S. Immigration and Customs officials and agents with violence? How about the assassination of Charlie Kirk? All of these, friends, are the result of the dehumanization of the recipients of the violence by the ones who carried out the violence and the groups that they represented, who many of them cheered at the assassination of Charlie Kirk. This is a serious problem in the United States of America and all over the world. But in the United States of America, that came to be a nation under God, indivisible with liberty and justice for all. And the reality is, the more we have abandoned the God who made and preserves us a nation, the more we have abandoned his authority in the land, the more individuals take up their godhood, dehumanize others in their own mind, determining that they're not worthy to live, and therefore they're going to carry out vengeance in the name of their own God. The Bible says, "Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord." These people say, "No, vengeance is ours." Pretty bad stuff. And yet, this kind of violence has become morally acceptable to the political left. I'm looking at an article, I'm reading from what it says. So something has shifted in American political culture. What has shifted is not politics per se. The politics is the result of the shift, the moral and spiritual shift in the country. And the moral shift is the result of a spiritual shift that has so dramatically shifted off its axis from that which existed in 1830 when Alexis de Tocqueville, that secular French analyst, came over here to study what it was that made America great. You see, France, just before that time, around the time of the American Revolution, with the storming of the Bastille and all the things that went with it, the erection of Madame Guillotine to take off the heads of 3,000 or so of the leaders and Christian leaders and so on of France. What was going on there? Well, what was going on is they rebelled against the God of the Bible. Openly, notoriously, feverishly, to the point where they changed the laws so that they would not coincide to any number related to the Bible. For instance, the days of the week were changed from 7 to 10. The months of the year were changed from 12 to 10. Everything was based upon 10, which was perceived to be the number of man's authority, not God's. Are you listening? That's the French Revolution. They couldn't get a stable government going. Everything was violent. Even Robespierre, the attorney that had launched all of that, was revered as even called Messiah. Within a couple of days after having been labeled Messiah, they took off his head as well. Nobody can stand against this kind of dehumanization. Nobody. Jesus couldn't stand against it. The religious leaders of his day did exactly the same thing. They even suborned perjury in order to try to get Jesus convicted by a Roman tribunal or governor who himself declared, "I find no fault in this man," yet they still cried in their dehumanization of Jesus, "Away with this man, crucify him." That's how it happened. Look, my friends, if we're going to live in this generation, on the near edge of the second coming, we are going to have to conduct ourselves with a different attitude. On this program, we deal with issues, not people. People are only the representation of the issues. We strive not so much to deal with the personalities as with the principles. And that's what we're doing today. When Alexis de Tocqueville came over here in 1830 to discover what it was that made America great, after 9 months, he concluded the very first thing that he noted about the country was its Christian nature. He said, it's not as if every single person is a Christian, but the Bible and the authority of the Word of God and the fear of the Lord bound the nation together without any question. That's what bound the nation together, and that is what defined the moral strength of the nation that unified it around the fear of the Lord. Now, he didn't use the term the fear of the Lord, but that's what he was describing. It was the authority of God and his word, the fear of the Lord, and that the principles of the Christian faith unified the country. Not unifying the country anymore. Not unifying England anymore either. Here's an interesting article. Theological treason. The Church of England tossed out of the Church of England. What's going on there? Well, the Church of England has become so antithetical to the authority of the Bible on the issues of our time that it's made it impossible for the majority of people who were part of the Anglican Church, the Church of England, to remain there. So in a sense, the Church of England has given the left foot of fellowship through theological violence to the majority of the people who were Anglicans, because the Church of England and its authority in England have decided to disregard the authority of the Bible and actually to reprint Bibles that get rid of the language that they don't like concerning homosexuality and such things. In other words, the Church of England has arrogated itself, its leaders have arrogated themselves to godhood, so that people that wanted to worship God according to God's governments and his word were given the left foot of fellowship for all practical purposes and have left. They're not leaving violently. It was the Church of England that acted violently through theology. The rest of them were not worthy to continue. We'll be right back. A lot more to talk about here on the program today. I hope you stay with us.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for a greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
I welcome you back to Viewpoint. We're talking about the dehumanization of human beings and how it leads to all forms of violence that we're seeing, just as was prophesied by Jesus, as it was in the days of Noah So it would be just before his second coming. Now, let's take a look at another application of this matter of spiritual orientation and a kind of violence to dehumanize the majority of people on the planet, or at least the majority of people who claim the name of Christ, that is. We're talking about the New Age group. The New Age group. It's the evolution of the New Age. You remember back there in the 1960s, this is the age of Aquarius, Aquarius, and so on. Very popular song. And what it was describing was a new age that was coming upon the earth. And it was right. So it was very similar in some respects to the Age of Enlightenment that preceded the French Revolution, where every person becomes their own I Am, their own God. And as a result, it continued to make its way through the Western society in the form of individuals who promoted this kind of thinking, New Age thinking, theosophical thinking that has bound itself to so-called Christian thinking, but it's not Christian at all. One of the major theosophists was Alice Bailey, probably one of the most instrumental in developing the infrastructure and presenting the strategies of today's New Age movement. Because we don't have a whole lot of time to go into this in detail, I direct your attention to my book, Messiah, Unveiling the Mystery of the Ages. One entire chapter is called New Age Mystical Messiah. And it's fascinating, just absolutely fascinating. I urge you to get a copy of the book. $18 will put that $22 book in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org. That's saveus.org. You can call us at 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255, at $6 for postage and handling. Messiah, Unveiling the Mystery of the Ages. So where did all this leave? We know that Oprah Winfrey got into it triple time and invested millions of dollars of her money in order to disciple the nation into this New Age spirituality. Marianne Williamson, who ran as a Democrat for Senate for the presidency of the United States, who was a major force in the globalization of New Age faith. And so what's happened now is that this matter of the New Age thinking, the uniting of the world in a kind of euphemistic, mysterious spirituality called Christ consciousness that has nothing to do with Christ, but they use the term. They adopt the term Christ to get the attention of a lot of people. So this New Age spirituality, which is kind of like a syncretism of many religions of the world, is becoming now the magnetic attraction that's chasing the world ever closer to a bond now universally defined as globalism. That's what's happening. Now, where does that lead? If Christians are already called white supremacists or other labels, Hillary Clinton called them, what was the term? She had a very unpleasant term used to say you're just worthless. Worthless. Well, here is how these New Agers feel about Christians. You're not entitled to live. You cannot be tolerated. Why can you not be tolerated? Because if you do not embrace this world's first attempt at creating global consciousness, you necessarily cannot be expected to be received or even put up with in the ongoing society as we move toward the new global order. So what must happen to those people? You and me. What must happen to people who are given the, who become the odd man out, given the left foot of fellowship in the world? Here's the term that is used. You must be selected out of society. Now, that's a kind of, that's a euphemistic term that really is violence. Selected out of society. Now, how is somebody going to be selected out of society? Well, they have to be identified, first of all, but how are they going to get out of society? Friends, that's where persecution comes in. Oh, I know you didn't want to talk about it because people don't believe that that can happen in the United States or even in Europe. It is already happening. So, this matter of dehumanization preceding atrocities is exactly the ultimate modus operandi that will be used to drive Christians out of the Western world, either to imprison them or to kill them, or to eradicate them through a means such as, if you don't receive the mark of the beast, you won't be able to buy or sell, you won't be able to feed your families, and you'll either be forced to conform, that's violence, friends, forced to conform, which is also dehumanizing, because it says you have no right to think other than what we say. You have no right to believe in God if we don't. You have to believe in the counterfeit Christ, the Antichrist. He's promising you everything you ever wanted and everything you ever needed. He's promising you peace on earth. How can you possibly resist it? If you do, you're not worthy to live. That's what's coming. And it's deemed to be morally acceptable because there is no morality when you have abandoned the fear of the Lord. You develop your own group morality, which is defined as the survival of the fittest or whatever we have to do to achieve our agenda. In other words, the end justifies the means. How do you think all of these atrocities have occurred in Africa? How do you think the hundreds of thousands of Christians are being butchered there in Nigeria? How do you think that's being justified? How do you think it's being justified in the premier Muslim fundamentalist nations of the world? How do you understand that that's being justified? It's being justified because of dehumanization. Muhammad purposely dehumanized Christians and Jews. Not in the first part of his reign in Medina. Or was it Mecca? Anyway, where he started, no. He tended to show at least some favor to Jews and Christians, but he could not get them to submit. So he changed his whole modus operandi and said, you must hunt them down behind every tree, Jews and Christians are not to be tolerated. They are infidels, and you will not tolerate them. Kill them wherever you find them. So, that's the fundamental premise of jihad. Now, not every person who considers himself a Muslim necessarily buys into that, because there are many people that would be called, they would call themselves Muslim, that are just cultural Muslims. They were born in a Muslim country. Just like a person born in America claims to be a Christian when they're not. Just because you walk into a garage doesn't make you a car. Just because you were born in Turkey doesn't make you a Muslim. And so on. But that's what's happening in our world. So, Christian persecution worsens significantly worldwide. in both quantity and intensity. Now, this is coming from the head of the president of the International Society for Human Rights in Germany. He said, persecution and discrimination of Christians has deteriorated significantly across the globe. This takes the form not only of direct violence, murders, kidnappings, but also legislation, social discrimination, restrictions in public private life, and control of churches and religious services. The rise of authoritarian regimes, religious nationalism, political instability, and violent conflicts is increasing the pressure of persecution. And he's the former secretary of the World Evangelical Alliance. Two factors are the root cause of global persecution of Christians right now. First is dictatorial one-party states like China, Cuba, and North Korea that view Christians as a threat and therefore strictly monitor and oppress them. So even there, Christians are the odd man out. They're not worthy to live. They're dehumanized. But the second is a militant political religious movement or movements or groups that victimize Christians. And that's the one that I'm even more concerned about. Those are the ones that we've been talking about. They exist here big time in the United States. They exist all over Europe. They exist all over the world, and they're growing. The dehumanization that precedes atrocities. Don't allow yourself, as a professing follower of Jesus Christ, to become involved in the spirit of dehumanizing others. You will have actually fallen into the very same trap, leading to potential violence. As Jesus said, he who lives by the sword will die by the sword. That's not our role. Now, we are engaged in a kind of spiritual warfare. Not to kill off all of those who don't believe, but to pray, to stand in the gap, to be willing to stand as Jesus did, even amidst persecution, as the apostles did, and all who live godly in Christ Jesus. That's what we want to be prepared for. And that's why I wrote the book, When Persecution Comes, How to Prepare Our Hearts for Perilous Times. How to prepare our hearts for perilous times. I urge you to go to the website, saveus.org. If you don't already have the book, get the book. It's a $25 book, yours for $22. And when you read it, I don't think you're going to be disappointed. It's a very encouraging book. Oh, it deals with a lot of really tough facts. It really does. But even my wife thinks that the book primarily is encouraging, it's strengthening, it's like a coach trying to encourage and strengthen the team to be prepared for the big game. But what's coming is not a game. It's the fulfillment of biblical prophecy, as Jesus said. And so we want to be prepared. You want to be prepared. You want to make sure your kids are prepared. You want to make sure, pastors, that your people are prepared, and you're not going to play games just to pander to them for a period of time so as to make everybody feel good. It's time to get along and embrace God's viewpoint, Jesus' viewpoint concerning these issues. All right, thanks for joining us. Become a partner, friends. We're confronting the deepest issues of America's heart and hope from God's eternal perspective. I hope you see it that way. And I hope you will consider, seriously consider, becoming a partner, a financial partner with us, because without that, we can't continue. We don't have commercial support for this program purposely, so that no commercial business can tell us what we should or should not speak about. Thanks for joining us. Again, become a partner. Go to the website, saveus.org. Call us, 1-800-SAVE-USA. I believe God will bless you. I'm not going to tell you how, but I believe he will. And I bless you in the name of the Lord.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.